When you confront death at age 22, everything changes. It got me thinking about what I wanted to do before I actually die, because life is unpredictable. Can you relate? I'm Kiki Kelly, and this is my story. My friend Amy Hallberg thought I should share some of my stories with you. She'll be joining me here. Some are hard. Some are funny, and some are just unbelievable. But they're all true. So here we are, Season 2, Episode 7, Tales from an Inadvertent Bucket List Champ.
So there's no easy way to say this, but you had a miscarriage.
And there's no easy way to say this either, but I was excited.
Because
I know it sounds really weird, but so many women I've known, almost every woman that has gotten pregnant that I've known successfully has first had miscarriages, and I knew that.
Yeah.
And because I'd been told a million times that there was a 0% chance of me having children, the fact that I had such an obvious miscarriage, all of a sudden there was a fire that was lit inside that was like, oh my God, I could possibly get pregnant. I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Because remember the dream I had the month before?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's crazy, right? I mean, so these are the miracle years. These are when miracles started to happen, because I literally had nothing happen that I thought was miraculous before then. And I was ye of little faith.
But you were talking about how when you were a kid, before all of this happened, before all of your health crises, you did want to be a mom.
If you go back to your childhood years and look at how it is that you spent your time when you were most happy, I was either playing school with my dolls, or I was the mother, you know,
right,
taking loving care of them, or I was making little shows and commercials and things on my tape recorder.
So you were doing podcasts and being a mom.
Uh-huh. And teaching school.
And teaching school.
Isn't that funny? You know what I was not doing as a child?
Technology things?
Yes!
And here you are at Google.
Right.
Oh my gosh. So you're at Google doing that thing, and all of a sudden,
doing my Google thing.
Right. And all of a sudden, it's possible for you to be a mom. So what did you do? I mean, how did you respond?
Oh my gosh. You know, okay, so I don't even know how to explain it, but when a switch goes off in my brain, mm-hmm. You know, maybe I'm on the spectrum somehow, some way. This is definitely kind of seems like a spectrum thing, because my brain will switch, like, all of a sudden it was like, you can possibly have a child. So I immediately go into, how do I get out of this job so that I can prepare my body as well as I can for this one chance? It's my chance, right?
Right, because you still have the same body that's gone through all the things before.
Right,
right. Right.
But now I'm married, and in California, I mean, the house next door that is rat infested goes for $750,000. I mean, our rent was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
Wow.
So, you know, you really have to have a pretty good argument
you can't just quit your job to be pregnant.
not in those days. Not with Gen X. I mean, right. Any other generation would be like, please stay home and have babies. But
how are you going to pay for this, right? And what are you going to do with yourself?
Right, right.
And how are you going to justify
and,
the time
what?
Away?
I was, you know, and of course, it was just a tiny chance. It might just be one miscarriage after another, and heartbreaking too. So I had to have plan B. And
right.
That plan B had to look like plan A to everyone else. I didn't even tell my husband that that's the reason I wanted to quit.
Really?
No, I made the legitimate argument. I kind of even convinced myself. Okay, so I'd had this idea for
He knew you had had the miscarriage, though.
No.
You didn't tell him. Oh my gosh.
I don't think I did.
Oh my gosh.
Because I didn't want to get hopes up in him either.
Wow. Okay, so this is a big deal. So what was the cover story?
So I know, this sounds so deviant and Machiavellian, but at the same time, I'm like, I did not realize how deep of a yearning I had to be a mom.
Right.
I mean, I know these people who go through endless series of
loss, you know, pregnancy loss.
Well, and who go through all the treatments to be able to have a child or go through having, like,
yeah. Yeah. It's a thing. Yes.
Yeah. So I understood it. And I was, what, 33 at the time? 33, which is like your biological clock is so loud. It's like Big Ben. It's right. Like, oh my God. But,
right.
But, you know, I also, everything, like I was the one in a million patient who everything went wrong. So why would I be able to have a successful pregnancy?
Right.
And yet, there's a chance. You're saying I have a chance, you know?
So like, what is your cover story? What is the plan?
Well, and if I hadn't had that dream,
right,
too,
right,
I don't think I would have hitched my star to
okay.
this plan, because I am ultimately pragmatic, but also I believe in miracles enough to, hey, if God is going to give me a tiny little opening, I'm going to take my chance. So the plan was,
right?
The plan was to write this novel that, you know, I'd been thinking about for a while, and I had mapped it out, and I had all these great character names, and it's a female sex offender is the lead character.
Right.
Because at the time in the news, there were all these teachers who were being really gross with their students,
right.
and
this
people
was
running
the,
away. With,
this was what, like around 2000-ish?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in the early 2000s. So, yeah, that was a thing. And I was just like, but, you know, you never have a woman as a sex offender in a book, right?
Right.
But I didn't really want to deal with it because it was so icky. So I was going to kill her off in the first paragraph. Like, it starts with, the book starts with her dying. And then,
so Machiavelli is right. You're kind of brutal.
Well, she was horrible.
She was horrible. Okay, she had it coming.
Plus, she killed herself. She killed herself in the worst way possible, like in her parents' garage while they were at church in this tiny little town of Pine Grove, Minnesota, so that they would be
So this
chained.
Is your plan of how you're going to justify leaving Google is to write this book about this
yes!
deviant woman.
Yes, yes. And how she was like the perfect foil because she's this beautiful, talented volleyball player woman, right? And, you know, the golden girl of Pine Grove, like homecoming queen, all of that stuff. And you don't find out because it unravels slowly that she has all these victims.
You're still going to write this sometime. You have way too much of this mapped out in your head. But okay, let us move on, shall
but
we?
But everyone dies.
Okay.
Which is also great.
And in real life, while you're making these plans, at a certain point, you actually get pregnant again, an honest to goodness viable pregnancy, and you don't even know it. For the longest time, you don't know it.
Yeah. Okay. So I think the one person I did tell, obviously, is my mother, who's the doctor, right?
Yeah.
And she was like really excited for me too. I mean,
of course.
Oh my gosh.
Grandbaby.
Well, but she's like, you know what? Okay. It's probably going to be two cycles before you can try again, because it's hard. Miscarriages are hard on your body, and you already have a body that has, you know, issues. So I was like, okay, that's okay. I've got two cycles to get right. I have this amount of time.
Because you can just map it out like that.
Well, who knows? I was like, at minimum, right? So
right.
But what I didn't expect was that, gosh, it was almost like 2 months to the day of the dream that I had where I'm asked to come and join the dance and given the beautiful cherubic fingers of my future daughter, you know, that it happened way earlier than I thought. It was within a month.
Wow. Yeah. And you had a lot going on at work, right?
Yeah. So we both worked full time at Google. Full time for me meant minimum 60 hour work weeks.
So minimum 60 hours means that there were, what, 70, 80 hours? I mean...
Yeah, so in that particular time span, after the miscarriage, my office mate and co-senior editor, Rebecca, finally gets a chance to take a vacation after, you know, not having any. She goes to France and visits her sister, who has a new baby.
Mm-hmm.
So there's echoes.
Babies.
Right. And at this time, the really, really high management, like Sheryl Sandberg and David Fisher, were our direct reports. They were our direct bosses. And they're trying to help everyone out because the hierarchy was too flat. So we were trying to hire management and things like that in our section, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we ended up getting this.
Should we just call him Pig Boss?
Yeah.
We're going to call him Pig
it's
Boss.
It's literally the only boss that I have not. No, there was another one.
Okay.
Two. Two. Out of all of them, though. But
right.
But the rest is I. all I can say is glowing, glowing, amazing, wonderful things about Cheryl and David and other former bosses, like my boss at IBM, Sean. And I mean, right. these guys were my mentors.
And then there's this guy.
This guy was literally playing golf while Rebecca was gone in France, and we always had a multitude of projects, you know, going out and everything, you know, we're constantly like trying to be first, right?
Right.
So I'm working, it was literally, I logged in 100 hours, like 100 hour work weeks, and he's calling
me. That's crazy.
He's calling me from the golf course. He shows up for the meetings, and his hiring made more work for me and Rebecca because he didn't know shit. And he needed us to prep him and write out his things and explain things to him and everything. So it was just like...
And you said he was also taking credit for your work.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. You write it out and then he's like, this is mine. And he's passing off your right. work as
right.
his.
Right.
While he's golfing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So you're working a lot.
Right. So I feel really dizzy and stuff, but that's not unusual with dehydration and overwork and not enough sleep. And
you're driving, you said, like, you're driving a long ways.
No. That was IBM.
Okay. You actually live close.
Yeah. I live in Mountain View. We live in Mountain View because we wanted to be close to Google.
Okay.
So it's not that.
But it's just you're there all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it was a joke that people had anything in their fridges at all. Like, if anything, it was maybe, you know, some ketchup. Because, right? Because you could eat at work.
Right.
There were sleeping brews at work. Or Rebecca and I would just crawl under our desks.
Wow.
Because everyone had a Google beanbag and, you know, it was... You lived there.
Okay.
That's just how it was.
Okay. So, what made you start to suspect maybe there was something you should be paying attention to?
Yeah. Well, okay. So it was Rebecca. She got back from, I mean, I just had my head in buried in work. There was nothing but work until she got back and I was, you know, right.
Right.
And I did tell her about the miscarriage.
Right.
And she was like, well, you could be pregnant or whatever. You know, I'm like, I know. So she's like, what if you are now? You know, you keep saying that you feel nauseous and stuff. And I'm like, oh, no. You know, it's too early. My mom said it was going to be 2 cycles. And, you know, this is just me. This is just me overworking. And I feel like this all the time and da-da-da. You know?
Right.
So right. She's like, okay, I think you should really take a test. And I'm like, I don't want to be disappointed, you know. And it's too early. It's just no.
Right.
She goes, okay, because I'm so stubborn, you know.
Right.
but she's in her own little way. She's like pushing me till eventually I did take a test. And it was, I'm not exactly sure why I was home, but we didn't live far from Google and she lived farther away. So for whatever reason, she was running an errand and she runs into my house and goes to the bathroom. And the test that I had taken, the pregnancy test, was sitting on the sink.
You hadn't bothered to look.
No, it was waiting. It was during the waiting period.
Okay, so you had taken it and you just left it and you'd gone off away.
Well, here's how it works, people. So you have to pee on a strip and then it gives you a little, like, either, you know, one or two
of the lines. Right.
So anyway, but I didn't expect it to be anything. And I went on into the kitchen. Rebecca runs in. She runs out holding the pregnancy test going, you're pregnant.
Huh?
And I was like, what? No. And then I didn't believe her. And I looked at it. I was like, no. And she goes, well, take another one. Like, it was so funny. And so, gosh, she was the first one to find out before me even.
Wow.
That's why we call her Auntie Rebecca, and she threw the baby shower and everything. Ooh, I know what she knows was a baby of her own.
So, not to get ahead of ourselves.
She's younger than me. Anyway.
Not to get ahead of ourselves, you didn't go to the OBGYN first. The first thing you did was not go to that doctor. What's the first...
It's not like I purposely went, I'm not going to go see a doctor. No, it wasn't that at all. It was you, in California, in order to get in to anyone, it took weeks and weeks and weeks, especially as a new patient.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but a lot of people were pregnant at the same time. So there was like a 7-week wait to get into the...
But you did see a different professional. The first thing you did was you went to a genetic counselor.
Oh my God. Well, yeah, I had to tell.
Okay. So why would you go to a genetic counselor?
Okay. So we both have the same bad gene strand.
Did you know that at the time?
No. When we met, I had come out of the fog of near death.
Right.
And was still really exhausted.
Right.
And he was perfectly healthy. And then within a few years, well, he's younger than me. He's like 4 or 5 years younger than me. So about the same age in your 20s is when these diseases show up. And his was even worse. His is called Boucher's disease.
How can it be worse than, I mean, you're missing a colon.
Yeah, well, he almost went blind.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah, he had double vision. And then it's a circulatory illness.
Okay.
Really, really rare. And my mother was the one who diagnosed it. I mean, it was really rare. And
wow.
He was on copious amounts, again, of prednisone like I had been.
Wow.
Except for him, it was even worse.
Like, okay.
Everything was worse. And so I had to, you know, obviously I'm like, oh my God, you know, like my first thought is, yay. And then I'm like, oh no, you know, like, oh, we have to go find out. You know, I would never, ever, ever in any circumstances, ever in my own situation aboard my own child. I just couldn't do it.
Disclaimer. And you are pro-choice.
I'm definitely pro-choice.
Anyway, back to the story.
Yeah. But I'm not going to play God for anyone else.
You just went to the doctor because you needed to know what you were dealing with.
Well, right. Because I'm like, okay, so, you know, if we have an autistic child or a child who has, you know, special needs, you know, we got to figure this out. I don't like surprises. I like
right.
to know things in advance.
Right.
So that I can get them kind of planned out. So yeah, we go to the genetics counselor who, there was no wait for that.
Right.
That. And she says, I guess her assumption was that we were thinking about abortion, which wasn't true, at least in my case.
Right.
And no one else can make me do anything. Anyway, so not that anyone was going to. But anyway, she says, well, would either of you have chosen not to be here, given the lives that you've led with all of its trials, but also with the wonderful things that have happened? And we both immediately said, you know, of course we'd rather, you know,
right.
be here. So yeah, I saw a genetics counselor, but it was a long wait for the actual obstetrician.
Now, in this time, you started making moves. You went to see Sheryl Sandberg.
Yeah.
So how did that come about?
First of
all, Sheryl Sandberg.
Right.
Like, oh my gosh, Sheryl Sandberg. Anyway, okay, continue.
Right. Right. And now she's a household name. And, you know, at the time, though, I'm going to just say this point blank. Sheryl is one of the best bosses I ever had. She was so good.
Mm.
She was on top of it. She cared so much.
Mm.
She was so smart and truly kind. So I absolutely loved her.
So what was the circumstance? Under which you went to see her?
Because
it wasn't quite about the pregnancy.
No.
Exactly.
So when Rebecca got back from visiting her sister, she found out that this pig boss had been on the Gulf Links and, you know, just making my life miserable. And she got so mad. So, and she had already had she had known Sheryl from before, way before me. And I think that they had a little chat about it. Anyway, Sheryl called me in and wanted me to tell her my thoughts on this guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Minnesota nice.
Right. We don't want to say things that might be problematic.
Or hurt someone. I mean,
right.
I was still making some excuses for him, but then no. Like, she basically looked right through me and she was like, just tell me the truth.
Sheryl did this.
Yeah. And there was something... I kind of started to cry a little bit because I had pregnancy hormones, and then she started to cry a little bit, and then I thought so during this chat that we had together in her office, we both discovered not only that the pig boss was like racist, sexist, woefully inadequately prepared for a job at Google, but both Sheryl and I were pregnant at the same time. She with Natalie and me with Madeline. And so we were both having these pregnancy hormones and crying. And and I'm like, oh my God. So she even knows, like, Sheryl knew my plans before. Like, no one else really did. I was like, listen, you know, I don't know if this is going to work out. I was told I would never have children. And she's like, but you know, we're going to have daycare, we're going to have childcare at work now. And I was like, you know what, though, but with given my health concerns, I just feel like I need to.
That's the only reason you would have walked away from Google, too.
Right? Oh, of course. Who leaves? Come on.
Right.
I mean, granted, we worked hard, but wow. Right. Everyone was so great and so smart and,
right.
and, you know, you had so many great perks and it was a wonderful job. Anyway, and I don't usually walk away from jobs because I defined myself by my job for so long.
Right. So something has to push you out.
Something has to push me off the edge of the cliff.
And this was it.
Right. So I was like, you know what? I've always wanted to write this novel anyway. So I'm going to, I will not leave you in the lurch. And she was like, I know you won't. And by the way, you know, if you ever want a job, you always have one with me. And I'm like, oh, they were crying some more, right? And I'm like, so I gave 9 weeks official notice with her.
Right.
And what I started to do was to backfill my own position and to write job descriptions and to get the team in order, you know, just make sure everything, all the mm-hmm. T's are crossed and I's are dotted and all that. Because I would never leave them in the lurch. And
kind of being a mom to the people who are following you.
Well, that's kind of what I was hired to be because I was one of the two, I think, one of the two oldest people there. I mean, I was hired because of my vast experience. At the age of, what, 28, 30?
Like, you're the oldest
the
one.
The old person. Totally.
Oh, wow.
Totally. No, Cheryl and I are the same age. Doug Edwards was a little bit older, but not much. I mean,
yeah,
it's a young, young company.
Yeah.
Larry and Sergey were about my age, a little bit younger.
So Cheryl knows you're leaving. You backfill your job and they throw you a party.
Yeah. They don't know it, but, you know, I do. It's kind of a retirement party from
right.
this big stretch of my life in
wow.
high tech.
Wow.
And it, you know, it does. It's really hard for you to make changes, even though I've, you know, had 9 distinct lives in one life. But
so let's just talk about that for a second. Is tech a natural fit for you? I mean, like you moved to some pretty high heights in the tech world.
Here's the thing. I have many facets.
Mm-hmm.
And the part of me that gelled with the tech world, especially having been a teacher for 3 years in difficult circumstances after having almost died, mm-hmm. I was exhausted.
Okay.
And working with computers was a relief.
Huh.
You know, and especially
relief
on the cutting
in what
edge.
Sense?
Well, if you're testing for bugs or you're breaking things or, you know, like that's what you're supposed to do. So I wasn't worried about
doing damage.
You know what? The weird thing is in every other sphere of my life, I would probably be more insecure. But in the work world, I just throw myself in head first and figure I'm going to figure this out. There may be a steep learning curve, but and I put the work in. So, I mean, I read the books and I study and I ask the questions and I bribe the programmers in the special AS400 room so that I could get access to things that other people didn't get. I mean, yeah,
right.
I'm pretty.
And you took on kind of a mom role.
Which was natural. I was momming already as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm, you know, making food for people and planning, organizing outings and holiday parties and stuff. And later, I was a mom for the team. I become a senior editor and I'm hiring people. And those hires are, you know, they come and ask for advice or whatever. It's just part of my personality. And later as a team leader for the Olympic stuff, same thing.
So you said when we were talking about this before we started recording, you said that looking back on it, you were almost an exchange student to the tech world, though.
Aside from mothering, honestly, I don't know if I'm really fit for any other job. So the way I dealt with it, with anything new, because I had been friends with foreign exchange students always, and I just thought, you know, that's such a good way to go into something is, okay, I'm a foreigner here. You know, I'm going to pay attention and listen and figure out the codes, you know, what kind of acronyms are used in the language and, you know, how do people dress in this world and, you know, what are the normal. So I'm like studying
mm-hmm.
and then I immerse myself and before long I'm immersed and enjoying it. You know, I can't say, you know, it's not fake or anything. It's not like acting. It's
a role you've taken on for a while.
Yeah, and again, I take on the role. I never think I'm going to stop once I, you know, I go whole head first, whole, like, jump off a cliff, and I figure I'm going to be in technology for the rest of my life.
No.
Just like I thought I was going to be a teacher for the rest of my life.
Right. And now you've set yourself up. I mean, that's actually really good preparation for writing a novel, right? To study the things and see what's happening. So you've quit this job, and you're going to, while you're waiting to be a mom, you're going to write a novel. So how's that going?
Terribly. So my growly, I'm not normally growly anyway, but, you know, when you work 60 to 100-hour weeks for a long time.
Right. So this book where everybody's going to die.
I mean, it was kind of, it felt like,
cathartic?
And subversive, right? I'm like, ha, everyone's gonna die. It's like the little, which is horrible. But but what I didn't expect, because I'd never been pregnant before, and I'm like, oh, this is why grandma had 10 kids. Like, so once that dreaded first trimester is done and everything's good and healthy, and I'm like, oh my God, it's real. My body was so, I've never buzzed at a higher frequency, as far as, like, I didn't need any medicines at all.
Right.
I woke up with, like, joy for the day.
Right.
Which was not my, that's always, anyone who knows me knows I'm not a morning
person.
Kiki
doesn't wake up happy.
I never wake up with joy for the day. It's like, grah, do not talk to me until I have at least one cup of coffee.
And you weren't even, like, so the nicotine that you had been taking to keep your mouth sores at bay.
Suddenly I didn't need it.
Gone.
Yeah.
Cold turkey.
So, yeah, I didn't need it. I didn't take anything. Plus the doctor was really clear. He was like, listen, you're a high risk case. So here's what's going to happen. You are going to walk 5 miles a day. You're going to eat perfectly. You're going to gain exactly 15 pounds. What else? Oh, and you're going to do yoga. You're going to do pregnancy yoga. And I was like, great. Okay. You know, again, a kind, but very much an authority figure, right?
Right.
You know, kind of like the guy in my dream, you know, the sage / God / Zeus.
Right.
You know, he's just telling me these things as calm as can be. And I'm like, yep, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And that's what I did. I woke up, I had a maxi loop and a mini loop. Like, the one was 2.5 miles and one was 5. So if I wanted to break them up, or if I wanted to do it all at once, and I'd stop at this little cute coffee house, and the two little gay boys who were there, and they would go, oh, how's the baby? And I'm like, oh, I think pretty good. And I'd get my one little cup of decaf, you know, and go on my merry way, and just walking through the parks. And, you know, I made friends with the gardeners of the library.
Yeah.
Oh, it was nice. It was so fun.
And you were feeling so good.
I could smell the earth. All my senses were so heightened. I was like, everything looked like it was springtime, right?
Right.
Well, actually, was it then?
Well, during it's California.
Well, it's definitely not. It's lovely still. But I could smell. Oh, it was right before springtime. So I could smell the earth and the plants growing. And like, the trees looked especially beautiful to me. I would just sit and stare at the trees. And it was like seeing the world in
so
a totally different way.
So everything is rainbows and sunshine.
And there's no way I can do this novel. I'm like unicorns, rainbows, sunshine, right?
So you fly off to Hawaii and go hang out in paradise.
So we decide to go to Maui, to Kaanapali. We do the, I had so much energy that we did the road to Hana in one day, and we're trekking through the jungles and going to see the waterfalls, and I was just glowing. I've never looked better in my life. I mean, like, it's kind of like in Fantastic Mr. Fox when she says she's pregnant and she glows. Like, it's literal. I mean, I convinced everyone that I was fine enough to, which I was, and I'm kind of surprised I took this risk, but I went horseback riding.
Wow.
It was just a canter, but I love horses. And we did the sunrise mountain, or ride a mountain bike down a volcano, Haleakala.
Wow.
I mean, I was like,
okay, so if I was listening to this story, knowing where you've been, knowing, you know, like, you know, the bucket list, because you almost died, and I see you here, this sure looks like, and we're going to find out, because season 3, we will find out what happens, but, okay, so it sure seems to me, listening to this story, that, you know, and knowing that you almost died, right?
She finally gets her happily ever after.
It's going to be all right.
It's a fairy tale come true.
Kiki's happily ever after.
But of course not.
So people, will it be, what will motherhood bring to you? People will have to find out.
Season 3. Thanks for listening to our finale of season 2. I can't believe our sophomore effort is done.
Woo!
Yay!
Thank you for listening to this episode of Tales from a Bucket List Champ. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast and share it with friends. New to us this season, our sound editor is the fabulous Kat Schoner. Our story editor and producer is me, Amy Hallberg, and our writer and executive producer is Kiki Kelly. We'll be back soon with season 3. It's complicated. Until then, what's one item on your bucket list?